Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory Weston on the podcast this week. I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Chameen.
Hello everyone.
So, plenty to sort of go over this week again through the Premiership, but we're going to start just briefly on the World Cup qualifying draw that's just been made sort of what, 3 hours ago. At time of recording, so Scotland, we've been paired with Denmark, Austria, Israel again, Faroe Islands and Moldova. So, I mean, it could have been worse. I think Steve Clark said it could have been worse, but it's certainly not a walk in the park or an easy group or favourable group. But just open up to you guys what your sort of immediate reactions to that draw, really.
I think you say it could have been worse. I mean, I think it could have been a lot worse. Looking at the seedings, I think that this is probably the best group Scotland have been given in recent times. I think Denmark have kind of in recent years had what they would probably consider to be a pretty decent crop of players, but they're, you know, getting on a bit in age. The likes of Eriksen, Kjær at the back, you know, they've still got the likes of Poulsen up front, but I don't think that they're as scary a prospect as some of the other top seeds. And then you've got Austria, who have kind of yo-yoed in and out of tournament qualification, sometimes look onto something and sometimes don't. And we've already shown that Israel are a side that we can beat, obviously. We've made it difficult for ourselves previously. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. Obviously, still building things at international level under Steve Clark. So, yeah, definitely optimistic.
And that's the same there. I'm happy we've kind of avoided the big hitters. Because I think the teams in recent years we've struggled against lesser nations. You look at games, okay, they're under different management, but even the one under Steve Clark, two were playing against Belgium, they were two Harrisons. I think games against Denmark is much more even. Austria is definitely winnable. I'm kind of glad you avoided somewhere like Poland in the second seeds. I would have taken any other four-seed team ahead of Israel, to be honest, just because I'm fucking fed up of seeing them. Honestly, I'm just disappointed. We've drawn a team we've played so much recently. I mean, I think we'll have played, by the time we play the games, we've played them seven times in the space of about 3 years, and in leagues where you play each other twice a season, you know, you don't even play that. You don't even play a team that unless you draw them in the cups and things like that. So it's mental to think that we can do that at international level. And then the bottom two seeds should really take care of themselves. And be glad that we've avoided Kazakhstan as well, given the disaster out there last time. But I would have liked to see this maybe. Like I said, I don't think we've looked with Austria in a while. We've looked with Denmark competitive in ages either. So at least it's kind of some new fixtures rather than treading over the same old ground where you maybe play Belgium, play Wales that you play heaps in recent years. There's obviously the shame about having fucking players there again.
Yeah, I think this the immediate thing when you draw Denmark sort of for me was that I think it was the World Cup qualifier a few years ago where they just absolutely took the Republic of Ireland apart, but that I don't think they're the team that they were in that sort of period. And I mean, I think Ireland were pretty crap then anyway. So
from memory, I think that was just an Eriksen individual performance. It was 21 players just kicking lumps out of each other, and then they're a class player that totally changed the game.
Yeah, and as I've pointed out as well, he's a player that's, I mean, he's barely playing for Inter anymore. So interested to see where he sort of ends up by the time we play them. But yeah, I think you said, Christy, the fixtures are getting sort of announced at some point this evening, so by the time we probably by the time we've sort of finished up, they're probably going to be out. But yeah, overall probably could have been worse, but I mean, there's definitely a chance we could sort of finish in the top two, but it's just those games against sort of the Denmark, Austria, and Israel that are so important to getting any sort of success in this group. But I guess we'll shift back to the sort of the league action, and I mean, we're going to start at Celtic Park, where Celtic yet again failed to win. Two wins in 12 now for Neil Lennon's side. Just sort of an hour or so before we started recording, the Celtic released another statement declaring their sort of support for Lennon. I think when you saw the result yesterday and then kind of woke up today and there wasn't any sort of announcement that they'd parted ways, you probably assumed that he was going to be kept on until you'd guess the end of the calendar year anyway, unless, I don't know, they lost the Scottish Cup final to Hearts, which, I mean, you would sort of understand that there would be no sort of way back for him there. But I guess it's I think if you were a Celtic supporter, you'd be a wee bit sort of frustrated by the just continued support when things clearly are just they're not even standing still. They're just going backwards week after week now.
Seems incredibly tone deaf to think that you're throwing the support behind a manager that everybody can see is clearly not getting anywhere near the best out of that. What is still a strong group of players. I mean, you look at the scenes that have been at Celtic Park, whether you agree with them or not, personally I disagree with them. They do screen a little bit of entitlement. You are going through a rough patch, but you know, all clubs go through a rough patch, even Celtic, even Rangers. But when you see those signs and you look at the run that you've been on, you've got to begin, is this the right man? And I mean, we all know, we've all said before, it's not. And the run that they're on just now is nothing short of disgraceful. And if you look at this game, the game that they just played on Sunday, Justin Johnson, you're actually quite gutted that you've gone to Celtic Park and you've not come away with all 3 points.
Yeah, I think from the game itself, again, I just thought Celtic were pretty poor. Not that anyone could watch it live anyway, but just going off the highlights. I just didn't think they were threatening at all going forward. Again, dominated the ball in terms of possession, but barely doing anything with it. The majority of their shots sort of were coming from outside the box or just in and around the edge of the box, not taking many shots actually inside the penalty area, which kind of tells you that they're really struggling to break sides down when they're sort of sat deep in their own area. I thought Xander Clark had made a couple of decent saves, but probably ones you'd expect him to make. But just going forward, Celtic are so flat and in defence, they're just so unorganised again. Clear that that absolutely nothing's going right for them at the minute.
I think there were a couple of occasions where you saw brief moments of quality, balls into Edouard, where in previous years he particularly and Celtic as a whole have had the ruthlessness, the clinicality to just put them away, no questions asked, whereas, you know, here he's maybe a step off, he kind of has to take a step out wide to retrieve the ball, or he just sort of pokes at the ball with the outside of his foot. And that's the difference between Celtic this year and previous years, is just lacking the cutting edge in every sense, both creating chances and taking them. And yeah, like you say, I think St Johnstone actually grew into the game and, yeah, I mean, surprisingly, very much worth the point.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure what Callum Davidson said after the game, but I agree with you there, Christy. I think they will come away with this pretty disappointed that they've not went up the road with all 3 points, especially when you score first and it was a right sort of kick in the teeth that you just concede immediately after you score. That's quite a sort of typical thing that Celtic were good at in previous years. But and not really building on it. But just to sort of go into the St Johnstone goal, just so poor all round in terms of the defensive organisation for Celtic, as I kind of mentioned there. I mean, I don't really... You can tell that when Frimpong sort of presses the ball and the whole of the other defence kind of just hold the line, that there's no understanding of what they're supposed to be doing in that sort of situation. And it's a decent sort of awareness from Tanzer to slip in May. And Kane's well onside as well. But again, no Celtic defender is anywhere near him when the cross is played. It's just such a poor, easy goal to lose for Celtic.
Yeah, you've got it spot on. There's no defensive organisation. I mean, if you look at it, I think it's Ayer, McGregor and Julien, when that ball slipped through to into Stevie May from Tanzer, I mean, they're all within about 2 yards of each other. And then that's where there's a massive gap, because obviously Ayer should be further out and McGregor should be further out. There's also, I think it's Ryan Christie as well, should probably spot that. And remain in position. If he remains in position, then there's, I don't think Tanzer can really play that ball through the gap. He really struggles to cut it off. But it's so, so sloppy, and it screams of, having absolutely no leader among the back line and no organisation. But a great cross from May, who maybe could have been a little bit selfish if he wanted to, but Chris Kane there to score that. What is a rare goal for him? I mean, he gets a lot of stick, but undoubtedly puts in a power of work, and he's probably still maybe a good player to have in the team as an option, even though probably nowhere near good enough to be a star.
Yeah, I think this is what Stevie May's been really good at this season, is just sort of unselfish forward play, putting the team ahead of, or putting the team first without going too cliched. But is there anything that Xander Clark can do with the equaliser? Is he at fault at all, or is it just sort of one of those headers that you just got to sort of hold your hands up and be right, okay, we were kind of unlucky there?
For me, it's very unfortunate. It's just not a header that you see very often. That kind of looping. I mean, it's obviously a backwards header as well. It's impossible really to read. I would be more sympathetic personally. I think that actually, of all the chances that Celtic did create, of the few chances that they created through the game, this was a incredibly low percentage one to score from.
It reminds me of that header that Kenny McLean scored at Tannadice, so probably about 5 years ago now. That sort of near post sort of flick on. I don't think El Yunusi's meant it at all. I think he's just meant to kind of flick it on into an area, and he has got unlucky that it's ended up going in. But the thing with Clark there, he's maybe cut off with Griffiths' run as well. If he tries to make the save, probably goes clattering into Lee Griffiths, he's maybe stopped him from trying to maybe make the dive. But it's really unlucky, and I just don't think Clark's expecting it at all. And I think he's probably thinking that that's going to be maybe mopped up by McCart, who's just behind El Yunusi. He probably thinks El Yunusi's going to leave it. Unfortunate for him, but kind of a bit fluky a way for Celtic to get back into the game and level it up. And obviously I on the basis of what I've seen and everything, on the limited things that everybody's seen, given the kind of the media blackout, if you will, Celtic definitely rescuing a point rather than earning it.
I mean, there's always a lot made of when Lennon decides to start Scott Brown in any game now, given how poor he's been recently. But there was points going by some of the highlights in this game where you're sitting with a back three and you've just got Brown sitting like 5-10 yards in front of that back three, having about four players in your own half at home to, like, no disrespect to St Johnstone, but Celtic still in this run of form probably would have expected to win that game, and it just sort of totally limits your options going forward. Again, don't really know why he needs him. Clearly he's not in there for, or if he's in there for like leadership ability, then that's not working, because they're still making so many individual mistakes. I mean, he was involved in one in the first half where St Johnstone managed to break. There's like a mix-up between him and Beaton.
Oh, that is hilariously bad.
That's, yeah.
You see, basically, I mean, Beaton does get himself muddled up, but Scott Brown basically stops and thinks, well, why are you not going to get it when he could easily go out and cover? And yeah, Celtic definitely get away with that one big time. The thing with Scott Brown was his role always in the team when they were playing a kind of 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, was he would drop in as almost as a third centre-back when Celtic would have the ball going further up the pitch, which allowed both full-backs to get forward. But when, and we've said this before, when you're playing with three at the back, you don't need that player anymore. You know, you can have maybe Callum McGregor being your sort of your deeper line player, and then get Ryan Christie, Tom Rogic, Olivier Chan, David Turnbull playing ahead of them. Scott Brown, it just he's rendered pointless in that system, and he slows the play down horrendously as well.
Yeah, just another poor afternoon for Celtic. I can't imagine it's going to get any better in the midweek in the Europa League either.
I think that, before we go on, I think this is St Johnstone's best ever unbeaten run while they've been in the top flight. Which, when we think about how they started quite slowly, but they were playing some good stuff, I'm kind of glad that Callum Davidson hasn't massively gone away from that, and he's stuck with it until it works. And you know, it's definitely paying off, because St Johnstone are, you know, where we've maybe criticised them before for being a bit basic and things like that. St Johnstone this year are a good side to watch. They've got a decent group of players that maybe are, maybe not spectacular individuals, but coming together to play really some really good stuff. And it's kind of good to see that they've managed to shift on from some more basic football to being a little bit more expansive, a bit more tactically flexible, rather than sort of some of what Tommy Wright was still kind of bog standard, even though he was still getting results out of it. But to get results playing a little bit better is always good to see.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And bearing in mind, of course, I was quite critical of St Johnstone earlier in the season. But I think it's easy to forget that, obviously, this is Callum Davidson's first venture into full management. Obviously, in the current climate where a lot of assistants and coaches get given these opportunities. But yeah, considering that, I think fair play to the guy. He's really... He properly has come in, changed the playing style, and like you said, Christy, they're still getting results, still hard to beat, as the current run they're on shows. So, yeah, a lot of respect for what he's done there, and doing something that other coaches in the league have been credited with, but haven't actually done in reality.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of what he's done at St Johnstone so far. But we'll move on to, the only game where there were fans this weekend in the top flight, and that's Ross County 0 Rangers 4. Not treated to an awful lot with the county home support. My sort of main takeaway from watching the highlights back in this game, and just kind of watching it back to back from the Celtic game, is just how much better Rangers forward players' movement is compared to Celtic. It's just next level stuff. They just drag opposition defences all over the pitch, creating space for others. So many sort of unselfish pieces of play, especially from guys like Morelos. And they're so dangerous. It's almost like a broken record, the way we kind of look back on Rangers games at the minute, but they're just so consistent, just repeating the same patterns and getting the sort of the results that they deserve, the same rewards.
It's like a well-oiled machine, as you kind of hear often with a lot of top teams, and like you said, with the movement, Morelos drops in, Tavernier just automatically knows to move into that space that's created. Tavernier just knows to move into that space that's created there, and likewise with with Roof as well, it's a lot of interchanging, as we've said in previous weeks, you know, and you don't want to go on about it all the time. But the other thing about it is that the players aren't afraid of a one-on-one. Ryan Kent playing with a lot of confidence. He's more than willing to take on his man. So I like that. It's just really positive football, really offensive football, and, you know, great to watch. And yeah, it's just a stark contrast to their neighbours.
I mean, that first goal is that's one that's definitely practiced in training. That sort of movement and the sort of the attacking patterns. There's no doubt that that's off the training ground, and you've got what is at the moment in terms of attacking wise, is probably the most influential players for Rangers at the minute. Morelos, Kent, Roof and Tavernier. All involved as well. But the thing with, you know, Morelos and his new kind of role, people have maybe, like Chris Boateng doesn't get it. But the thing is, with Morelos, obviously he's scoring less, he's dropping deep. But with that happening, Rangers are scoring more goals, Roof scoring, Kent scoring, Tavernier scoring. Whereas before, when it was kind of the one-man show, it was if Morelos isn't scoring, who's going to get the goals? But now in his new role, you know, their goals are coming in from everywhere. But obviously, you said there about the Ross County fans. And just a wee point of note, so the Ross County, they've been in the ground for two, in the stadium for, they've been in for three games there. I was going to give a false stat. But yeah, so the three games they've been in, they've still yet to see Ross County win with an aggregate score of 10-1.
Just quickly there, did you say Chris Boyd says he doesn't understand why Morelos...
I read on Twitter, because I was out, so I didn't get to watch the game. But I think Chris Boyd was trying to say that he didn't understand the role Morelos was playing in this Rangers team. But,
someone like Morelos, there's more in his game than just scoring goals, whereas that's all Chris Boyd could do, and that's probably why he tended to drop out for the big games. Because, you know, against... in games in Europe for Rangers and against Celtic, they needed more than somebody who's just going to stand between the goalposts and then, you know, split some tap-ins.
I just think that's quite a bizarre thing for someone who's paid by Sky to give an opinion on. Jesus, that's a bit odd. One thing I noted was comparing the two, because naturally you are going to sort of just compare Celtic and Rangers' performances, and both of them put in plenty of crosses in both their games over the weekend, but it's the area in which Rangers are putting their crosses into that is causing such, or making them more dangerous, I guess, than Celtic. Celtics are putting their crosses in quite deep, not even in line with the sort of penalty area, whereas Rangers are always getting into that position where they're putting the crosses into that area within the 6-yard box. What was it Andy Gray used to call it? The corridor of uncertainty or whatever. And it's just that is just obviously and always going to be a much more dangerous position for the opposition to defend in. And you can kind of see that with the third goal as well as the first. But it's just, and that all comes from patterns, as we kind of mentioned. But one thing as well I wanted to point out is the rotation and sort of subs as well that Rangers made. And while new players are coming in, or different players, the style remains pretty much the same. These players can just fit seamlessly into the system that Gerrard's implemented, and that just says a lot for his management, I think.
It says a lot for the management and also the recruitment policy. Something that we've kind of talked about previously with the likes of Motherwell, where they recognise the style of play that they're going to implement, and they sign players based on that. And like you say, I mean, I think Rangers have multiple players in the squad capable of achieving basically the same performance levels. But yeah, I wanted to talk about that, the kind of difference in crossing. And obviously a lot of that has to come down to the quality of delivery, the quality of those individuals who get into those positions. But also, if you look at Ross County for the second goal, for example, they've dropped a little bit deeper than they are for the first goal, and Rangers recognise that, and then they commit more men into the box, into those deeper areas, the 6-yard box, like you say. That's why Tavernier's there on hand to score. Obviously gets a little bit lucky with the deflection, but it's just little details like that, I think, that you know, make Rangers a slightly more intelligent outfit offensively.
I mean, the other thing is, you know, the ball breaks out to Ken quite quickly, and he's first touch bang across the 6 yard box because he knows people's going to be there. He knows maybe Ruth's going to be there, Morales going to be there, maybe Tavernier's coming in. And obviously, that's, you know, two of those guys are there. I mean, they've created a 2-on-1 there. But I mean, the amount of joy that Rangers are getting in the right areas at the minute, especially here, and the ball in between Josh Reid, the left back, and the left centre back for Ross County was on so many times. And I mean, there was one just before in the first half where I think Tavernier's cross just didn't quite reach anyone. But I mean, the writing was on the wall the whole game. That's something that you need to sniff out. You either need to sniff out the pass or you need to maybe double up there to stop that from happening. And it just didn't seem to happen at all. And, you know, Rangers got a lot of joy out of it, as they will probably for the rest of the season, because but Tavernier's delivery and his running
isn't
that good.
Yeah, just to kind of finish off, or a couple of things before we finish off, because Haz, I think you you wanted to mention the Ross County own goal and how you find it hilarious.
There's just something funny about how, I mean, for me, he's got there in time, that he's not kind of, it doesn't appear that he's fully on the stretch. The ball's not exactly fizzed across, so it's just, yeah, it just looks like a hilarious error from Callum Morris? Callum? That's what is his first name? Yeah, Callum Morris. Yeah, it's there's just something quite funny about it. And then if you obviously watch the highlights, albeit there are fans in the stadium, you can still hear plenty, is all I'll say on that. And it's just quite funny, to be honest.
Yeah. Just to finish off on in terms of Ross County, came into this one off that win last weekend about Celtic, and I think they lined up largely the same way in terms of shape and personnel. Clearly didn't get anywhere near the same amount of joy as they did last week. Any sort of thoughts on their performance?
Predictable. I think this would have been the last game they've been wanting after such a big result last week. They'd been looking to build on it with something a bit easier, which they probably have coming up next weekend. but you know, even let's say, but defensively, this was kind of much the same story for Ross County as it has been all season. He kept getting caught out, like I said earlier, with that ball into the right channel, splitting between the fullback and the centre half for Tavernier. Really poor from the own goal. And I mean, Cole Donaldson, what on earth is he doing for that last one where E10 manages to get him there? I mean, it's a simple ball down the line, and he's just totally failed to deal with it. Just stick it out of play, and he's just been. I mean, Eaton's not even made it that difficult for him, and he's totally lost the ball. Great spin from him and finish from Defoe. But it's just basics. It's basics that's still getting wrong. Yes, last weekend was great, but you were looking to build on it. This wasn't the game. I'm not sure Stuart Kettle will have learned anything from this, because it was predictable. Like I said earlier, I think that saw this one coming in my left. Didn't matter what they did last weekend, they were on a hide into nothing. They were always going to get beat this weekend.
That's what I think as well, and I think it would be easy to write it off as just, oh well, they're playing the best team in the country at the minute, but yeah, like Christy says, that error for the fourth goal is telling of a deeper issue. I mean, yeah, you just don't turn back into danger like
it's
that.
Just sticking out for the
throne. Exactly, yeah, so it spells a bit more worry to come for Ross County, and it just makes you think that perhaps that result last week is maybe papered over some serious cracks.
We'll move on now to, on paper, what would have looked like a pretty even game. Motherwell going for their 9th point of the week after their sort of, they were awarded the 2 victories, weren't they? through the COVID sort of related issues, but it wasn't to be. I mean, going into this one, Hibs, one win in five league games, wee bit of sort of patchy form. I think we've said over the last couple of weeks, not been massively convinced by them in the sort of recent period. But I mean, you've just gone by the highlights in the first half. I thought Motherwell looked like just shaded it. Although a lot of their decent chances probably came from set pieces. But in the second half, I thought that looked like the Hibs side that we were probably expecting at the start of the season. Just playing a sort of quicker tempo. Just their key players essentially standing up and putting in a decent performance for the first time in a few weeks, you could say.
Yeah, no,
I've
been beating off the boil a little.
That's
no pun intended.
I was going to say, is that a pun? Because
no, I totally didn't mean it. And I just, as soon as I said it, I went, oh, fuck.
Well, it kind of works, to be fair. I'll give you it.
It does, yeah, I suppose.
Because he's one of the people that has been off the boil.
absolutely. I think the only one that's probably been on it a little bit has been Nisbet, and obviously guys like Doyle just dropped out of the team recently. And I think they've still... Even with this game, I still think they're struggling to get the right blend in the midfield. I'm not sure any of the options at the moment are working all that well together. I mean, people were looking at Gogic and Newell, but there's been a few games they've been run over the top of. And even with somebody like Jay Wright dropping in or Halberg dropping in, they've still been run over the top of as well. But this is, yeah, a definite move in the right direction. A real good result against a team who maybe on the actual pitch haven't been playing too well, but on paper have picked up somehow some decent points in recent weeks. But I did read that the Hibs fans weren't too pleased until they kind of opened the scoring. There were kind of calls for them to change things up. Maybe didn't age well, but at the same time, maybe 3-0 was probably a bit of a flattering scoreline for them.
Yeah, it appeared to me certainly that Motherwell kind of, well, threw away a chance, a real chance to win this game, because, I mean, straight off the bat, Tony Watt misses what I would consider to be a very good chance. Good ball in from Lang. He beats, I think it's McGinn to it, sort of in the middle of the box, actually, and just sort of knees it wide. And for me, that's a massive chance. Obviously, we'll probably discuss the disallowed goal as well. But yeah, Motherwell, not really clinical. And then when Hibs, like you say, Rory, they kind of up the tempo, the intensity a little bit, finally get some of their offensive players involved in the game. And yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful strike for that first goal from Martin Boyle, but that's what those guys can do for you. I mean, they have such a dangerous front line that, yeah, I mean, they're bound to score goals just purely off of the quality they have in there. So, yeah, I think Motherwell will be kicking themselves. But like you say, I think Hibs still not quite clicking, but they've just got enough quality to beat teams like Motherwell.
Well, we might as well touch on the disallowed goal now. On first view, and I thought it was pretty soft. Stephen Robertson seems to think that it should have stood, and his point was if Motherwell going at half time 1-0 up, then it totally changes the momentum of the game. And I mean, I don't think you can massively disagree with him there. If that was the score at half time, then there's sort of several different questions that are asked upon that Hibs team. But did either of you disagree with the sort of decision from the ref, or do you
think... it's an absolute it should definitely stand. There's next to nothing in that, and yeah, I think Stephen Robinson's absolutely correct. I mean, obviously, kind of asking for an apology doesn't do a lot, but his point that the game is completely different because, you know, it takes a bit of impetus off of Motherwell, puts even more on Hibs, so the patterns would be different. It definitely does impact the result of the game. But yeah, unfortunately, his side just weren't clinical enough when they had the chances anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to work out actually what it was given for. I was trying, was he offside or whatever, but there's no way for me that should have been disallowed. There's no way near it. It's very soft. It's not a foul, it's one of these where there's, you know, the two hands on the back or anything like that. So, I mean, it would have totally had an impact on the game. But, I mean, like you said, Harry, they weren't clinical enough earlier on. And when Hibs turned it on, they couldn't live with them. I mean, the first goal is... I mean, a lot of the goals are really poor from Motherwell. I mean, for the first one, Stephen O'Donnell comes out really high, but he doesn't put enough pressure on the ball, and it's kind of the inside pass that basically takes three Motherwell players out of the game, and Nisbet, McGabby's kind of on his heels when it goes wide to Hallberg, and he makes it way too easy for him to cut it back. Cross is definitely not meant for Boyle, meant for Nisbet. But what a finish from Martin Boyle. I mean, to score from that angle with the right foot, you know, it takes some doing. I mean, that's when you're maybe looking for the left foot to bend it in, but to get the right foot, lovely, obviously, and off the post makes it that little bit more special. And I mean, we said earlier that he's someone who needed to start firing again, and hopefully for Hibs that's maybe him on his way to doing that.
I thought Hibs looked much better once Doidge came on. I thought he added a different sort of dynamic to their attack. And I think even though the latter two goals come late in the game, just Doidge's movement for his own goal, he doesn't really stop moving. He's always trying to drag defenders about, and he totally does, I think it's McGinley, out of his position. I don't really know what McGinley's thinking, to be honest. He had a bit of a stinker all round. But yeah, I thought he just sort of, him and Nisbet both opened up spaces for each other and for the other attacking players, whether it be sort of Boyle or Joe Newell, who also sort of had a pretty decent game again. Yeah, it's been sort of a long time coming for Doidge to sort of start scoring again. So for Hibs, they'll be hoping that's him on a bit of a run of form starting from now going forward over this Christmas break, whatever.
We noted we noted around the semi-final, the Scottish Cup semi-final that he is a massively important player for Hibs, and he kind of brings a completely different dimension to the attack, kind of opens things up for other players. We did question the lack of goals, so yeah, this is a big one for him, but I'm a big fan of the finish. I think that's, you know, supreme confidence to go for that near post, kind of with the instep. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've always known with Doidge, especially when, you know, he first came up and, you know, couldn't hit a cow's arse. No, what was it? Couldn't hit
barn
a
door,
arse,
is
banjo.
It? Oh, that's, yeah, that's it. The one.
Like we knew that, but his movement was always really good. He was always able to get himself into those spaces or create space for other people, and he still offers that even if he's not scoring. So he's always worth having there in the side. But his movement for his own goals, pretty good. I mean, I think Motherwell's defence is quite poor, and the lack of pressure he has on him when he takes a shot, Gallagher's body position is pretty horrendous. To be honest, yeah, it's a good finish, but the third one, obviously you've called him out already, Rory, with McGinley, just send that up the line, mate.
Yeah, no idea what he's doing there, but yeah, I think going by his post-match comments, Robinson was disappointed with the scoreline, but he said there was plenty of positives to take. In terms of Hibs, it's an enormous result for them. Because as we said on paper, it did look like quite a difficult fixture, and even though there are two late goals, it is quite a convincing scoreline, and they have a decent run of fixtures coming up. Hamilton away on Saturday, there's the League Cup quarter final in between that, and then a home tie to or home game rather to Dundee United, who, I mean, we'll touch on later, don't look up to an awful lot after the COVID positive players, and then just before Christmas they play St Mirren at home, so that'll be quite an interesting run of games for Hibs, especially with Celtic stumbling and Aberdeen as well stumbling about into in their run of form. But we'll move on unless any of you have anything to add on in terms of Motherwell, just to finish off.
Nothing here.
Nothing on Motherwell, right. Well, no worries, so we'll move on to Livingston 2, Dundee United 0. I put in our sort of group chat earlier on today that it was quite telling on the game that my first note on this game was that Ian Harkes has had a haircut. And that's, it was just largely down how dull this first half seemed. Just, it's quite typical of Dundee United so far this season. There was that, I think it's the Arab Analysis Twitter account, he put out that that's 6 games now, I think, that Dundee United have had an XG of 0.5 or lower, which just tells you that going forward, they have absolutely nothing going for them at the minute.
Wait, was that in a row?
I think it's 6 games in total this season with that figure.
Was it not 6 out of the last 7, I thought?
I'm gonna get the figure for you, because it's.
I think it is that.
It's the total. Yeah, yesterday's was a total of 0.29, which obviously referring to Saturday's game, which is horrendous. But yeah, 6th game out of the last 7, which has featured a XG below 0.5, which is just, I mean, what can you say about that?
Is that not including League Cup group games against Peterhead, maybe, and maybe Kelty?
Yeah, it could be as well, which just is...
I don't know if it would go back that far. Maybe one of them would be included, but, I mean, that is... I mean, we've watched them, so we're not. I'm not surprised at all by that stat. But, we saw it against Hamilton. When you allow the attacking players a bit of freedom, and, okay, Nicky Clark's not playing here, you know, they can score goals, and they've got the capability with Clark, with Shankland, with McNulty, and they can do it, but the system and the way they want to play basically doesn't allow a lot of the time for that to happen. And the time when it did happen, it was like almost like, oh shit, we're getting beat by Hamilton here, right, let's try something different, and it worked. Okay, they got a little bit lucky with the late penalty, Callan blazed it over the bar, but you know, it worked when you allowed these players a little bit of freedom. But they're just so restricted, and you're never going to get the best out of McNulty, Shankland, when you're playing this way.
Yeah, the other thing is that it's almost as though, and I know that Clark wasn't playing in this game, but it's almost like just playing 3 strikers doesn't actually guarantee goals, as Mickey Mellon kind of suggested previously. But yeah, I think it's odd as well, because you can see at times there are a couple of indications in this game that they can move the ball pretty well, pretty quickly, but they just choose not to. And like you say, it's a lot to do with the over-structuring, over-rigid system that's in place there. And it is just restrictive on the creativity.
Does it remind you of anyone, Harry?
I'm not even going to go there, to be honest. it's obviously frustrating to watch, because the talent is there.
Yeah, but obviously in the end it was Livy's day. The first goal, I'm a wee bit baffled by it. Has Pittman's clearly noticed that, right? There's an absolute load of space opening up in the sort of centre of the pitch. He travels so far with the ball, almost like from the halfway line to the edge of the Dundee United box, without any Dundee United player thinking, right, okay, maybe it's going to be a good idea to eventually close the guy on the ball down.
This is another one that reminds me of someone, Christy. Just this weekend with, you know, a lack of closing down and just allowing someone to shoot free.
That's what I thought it might.
Yeah, and this is not the first time from Liam Smith that he's come up with a really poor piece of defending. But yeah, for me, this is mind-boggling, especially because there's no one on that side for Liam Smith to worry about. He's just got to get closer. He's got to shepherd Pittman out wide and don't let him take a shot, because that's the only real option he's got. Yeah, it's just
I have no idea what he's thinking there.
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is, I mean, as much as we like to place a bit of blame on Connolly because he's not particularly great, he's got to stay wide. I'm not sure who it is because there is a runner out there, and he's eventually the one who basically gets closer to Pittman as he shoots. I mean, Hearts is running with Pittman. If Smith comes across, he can at least delay him. Hearts can cover him in there, and then you've got Connolly cutting off one side, Hearts cutting off the other side, and you are basically forcing him into shot, but you've got a bit more coverage there. But, I mean, you're just making it so easy for Pittman to shoot, and fair play, it is a really good finish. But, you know, why are you letting him run, you know, 30, 40 yards of the ball and letting him have a shot without even getting close? It's really strange, and for a team who basically don't want to attack, you at least need to be able to defend, and, I mean, that's a little bit embarrassing.
When you sort of have those Twitter accounts like awful football moments and stuff like that, just like to sort of highlight the standard and stuff. I mean, we obviously want to talk all Scottish football up as much as we can, but that Nicky Devlin run you brought up in our group chat earlier on today is just that is wild how he's come away with that with a corner, that results in the goal.
Yeah, I mean, hilarious. Because the first touch is so heavy. And who is it there that it's Edwards that gets over to it? But how he's not got there in plenty of time to just knock that back to his keeper is beyond me. To be fair to Devlin, it's a good tackle to take it back. And then he takes another horrendous touch and it's tackled cleanly. It goes out for a corner, which he's so lucky to even get that. And obviously, like you say, they then go on and score. So misery compounded for Dundee United. But yeah, and to Chris's point, wasn't so much an issue them being so blunt in attack when they were actually pretty solid at the back. But with these errors kind of creeping in, it doesn't look very positive in any sense for Dundee United at the minute. And you think that something's got to change, you know, style wise or just, yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
Just from Edwards, I mean, he's running like a pinster when his arse hair's tied together. It is so, so slow. There's no excuse for him not getting across there and getting to the ball. I mean, Fuchs has managed to make a 50, 60-yard run to get there and make the last-ditch tackle. And, you know, you can't make that wee run there with a bit of 10-yard advantage. It's a little bit embarrassing, and he's kind of at fault for the goal as well because he totally misses the header at the corner. He kind of stoops for it and makes a bit of an arse out of it. And I mean, not a Marvin Bartley acrobatic effort is not how you expected Livingston to pretty much wrap this game up, but that's what happened.
To be honest, I think I'm at a stage of the season where I'm not surprised by any sort of goal that Marvin Bartley scores. I just, as the season's gone on, I think he can do anything. He's one of those midfielders. I mean, once you have that discussion about like Gerard Lampard's goals and that, I mean, Bartley's up there now, isn't he? That's,
I mean, he can
he can do everything. I mean, he's been bombing down the flank. He's putting crosses in. I mean, he arrives late in the box in this game at one point, and then scoring overhead kicks. I'm being quite generous there, but still, I mean, he's an absolute midfield dynamo. But
he's on and off the pitch because obviously he does all these media stuff, and I think he's still the Livingston reserve manager or coach.
No, oh, what a man!
So doing a lot of stuff. He's somebody who has ruled himself out of the managerial gig. Just probably doesn't have enough time.
I mean, he's too busy managing the midfield in every game he's playing.
Fair play to the guy. I'm a massive fan of his career renaissance at Livingston.
Just to finally sort of wrap up this game, that's a couple of positive results now for Livingston under his name's completely
David Martindale.
That's the one. Any sort of signs of a significant change in the way they're playing from Holt's tenure, or is it just sort of back to basics almost?
Pretty much. I mean, in terms of
who's playing, there's not a huge difference, because I think Livingston did kind of rotate the squad relatively, a fair bit. They tended, some games Ambrose plays, Taylor Sinclair, some games Fitzwater plays, and so on. Poplatnik coming back in for Emmanuel Thomas was maybe the bigger change. He came on as a sub, the Jet, as obviously in the back of his shirt. And I'm kind of pleased about that, because it's when I've seen, I'm not even thinking of Poplatnik, was the guys at Raith Rovers, McCotch, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the one.
It was him that I'm thinking of. I preferred him. But, Poplatnik gets himself in front of, it was Stephen Edwards, for the first goal. That's the only thing that I've noticed the last couple of games, that obviously the strikers changed out, but nothing too much more than that. Livingston, this is how they are going to play. And it's maybe just a case of it's more coming from the main part of it's coming from a different voice, and maybe Gary Holt's voice has maybe got a little bit stale. I don't know, but that's could possibly be what it is, with the kind of quick turnaround.
I think looking beyond the points, though, it's not something to get overly excited about. Again, the two goals that they've scored in this game have basically been gifted to them by terrible defensive decision making. I wouldn't get overly excited, but of course, when you're picking up results like he has in his first two games, he's not doing his chances any harm.
Mm. So we'll move on now to Hamilton 1, Kilmarnock 0. They're going to do it again, aren't they? Somehow. That's Aki's out there.
6 points in a week.
Exactly.
6 points from one game.
To be honest, I don't really know how they came out of this game with 3 points. I wouldn't even base a lot of that on the red card for Killy. I thought even after they were down to 10 men, Killy probably created enough chances to win the game. If I was going to point the blame anywhere, it would probably be towards Brophy and Kabamba for being so wasteful in front of goal. But I just want to get onto this now, right? So the penalty for Hamilton, I think it's soft as anything. I don't know if either of you...
It's not a penalty for me. It's bounced off his leg and then bounced off up his arm, which is pretty close on his side. I mean, I know that it's now basically any handball, but from what I remember seeing, I'm pretty sure it was, if it's hits another part of your body first, so your foot, your arm or whatever, if it comes up off of your arm, then that's not a penalty. But it's right. It's Willie Collum, so you never know what's going to happen. But, I mean, I'm just obviously got the highlights on the back of the ears as well. And there's some of the chances for Brophy, especially that one where he is kind of on the half volley. I mean, he slices it wide. You've got to at least hit the target there. And Kelly have only as much as you can have a go at the referee and things like that for some of the decisions, when you've got a number of chances and you're properly wasting them and not even hitting the target, you've only really got yourself to blame for not picking up anything.
I think, to be fair, I don't like these penalties, but for me, watching that slowly, I think it does hit his arm before his sort of thigh there. With the current standard and precedent that's been set, it probably is a penalty. I'm not exactly someone who's fair to Hamilton, maybe sometimes, but for me, I think there aren't too many complaints to be had there, just in the modern sense of what is considered to be handball. But again, Hamilton have kind of ridden their luck. The sending off obviously has benefited them in the long run, because they do start to create a little bit more later on in the game as Kilmarnock tire. It's just... Again, it's a similar story, really, to the Motherwell-Hibs game in some ways. Obviously, there's a lot less quality going around for Hamilton at the top end of the pitch. But, it's just a lack of clinicality, which has been kind of a theme really for Kilmarnock at times, and Brophy, I think, still kind of lacking that run of games consecutively that's kind of holding him back, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's the second chance really where he's got quite a lot of space and time in the box, and he's just a little bit slow to take the ball back onto his right foot and get the shot away and allows the defence back in. But yeah, I just think very wasteful. And yeah, it's kind of classic Hamilton.
My sort of argument about the pen is that there is a shout for Kilmarnock to get a penalty in the first half. And I mean, I'm not a massive fan of this handball rule either, but if Hamilton are getting a pen for their one, then surely that same rule should apply there for Kilmarnock. But I assume there's no complaints from either you over the red card for Dicamona. I think that's
no, an absolutely ridiculous tackle. I mean, what is he thinking? It's just, it doesn't, like, the way he's gone and made the challenge, he doesn't need to do that. All he needs to do is raise a leg, win the ball, stand up, and he's won it. Instead, he's jumped in, two-footed, sort of feet going down the way. It's, you know, it is basically all the criteria for a red card, and it's really, really daft.
Yeah.
It had shades of Chris Jericho's drop kick earlier in the week, so yeah, it's a dreadful tackle.
Are you trying to suggest that Dicamona was watching Dynamite the night before?
He must have been. Must have been. Got a bit of inspiration.
Yeah, to be fair,
It would have been the same had you combined it with the time it took Christoph Berra to get up after that tackle last week.
I just hope if he was, then he enjoyed Sting debuting, but there we go. Sort of anything else you want to add on this game before we move on?
It's not hypocrisy, but it is kind of, if it's a penalty one way, then it's probably a penalty other, or neither are penalties. It is that, but you know, it's Mr. Inconsistency himself as the referee, so not kind of surprised. I have since watched it back, and I began to change my mind on it being the kind of penalty, because I do see it now. I maybe didn't watch it fully first time round, and I do see it kind of hits off his hand first, and by the letter of the law, I suppose that is the penalty.
It's still a short distance to travel, obviously, but I don't like those penalties, but. The modern rule, it's just kind of hard to argue otherwise. The last thing I'd want to say is Brian Rice dropping more cliches in his post-match interview is always fun. It can sometimes be harder against 10 men. Well, I think it's just hard, regardless of how many men you're playing against when you're Brian Rice.
Yeah.
I think we'll... also fair play to Ross Callan. The penalty, obviously, Blaise, like we said, when we're talking to Dundee United, Blaise went over the other week, and you know, the ball's to step up and take another pressure penalty, especially just after how badly the last one went. Fair play to him, but I know I probably a doubly bad week for Kelly, obviously dropping the points here and having to sacrifice the points from their game against Motherwell. I mean, we didn't really go into it, but you know, obviously I know that this is more because the clubs are at fault rather than earlier on the season with those individual players. But with the clubs that are involved in these games, which is Motherwell, Kilmarnock, Hamilton, and St Mirren, surely there's place in the schedule that they can replay those games later on in the year. I mean, it's not, I can understand why they couldn't. Your schedule full fixtures, because obviously Celtic and Rangers in Europe, but you know, these teams have got no European obligations. You know, they easily could have fit them in somewhere in the calendar. I do feel that the clubs have maybe been slightly harsh done by with these ones.
Right, okay, we'll move on now to the last game of the weekend that we're going to look at, which is St Mirren 1, Aberdeen 1. again, another poor result for Aberdeen and an even worse performance. It's almost as though that sort of that decent spell that Aberdeen had over sort of September to October, that's just completely in the past now. They look like they've returned to that slow, unimaginative side that they were at the start of the start of 2020. Just looking like a team that have run out of ideas. So much wrong, I think, at Aberdeen at the minute in terms of the playing style or playing side of the club. It's just a bit of the regression is just alarming.
Yeah, I think there's a few things probably to point to that. The couple of injuries, Johnny Hayes being a key one. His injury initially meant he struggled on the left hand side for that kind of the wing back. Then obviously there's the COVID for Ferguson and McCrory and McLennan. That, you know, that's probably aided in three of the results. And then you've also got Scott Wright as well. His injury and Marley Watkins, you know, that's impacted Aberdeen going forward as well. Look at somebody like Ryan Hedges, who's probably not, you know, he's not played as well the last couple of games, and that's probably partly due to those two being missing as well. But when, you know, when, I mean, we say obviously back to basic, you know, back to kind of what we expected, but the goal Aberdeen scored is probably peak. Peak goal for sort of a McInnes side, a winger taking somebody on, getting a cross in and a headed goal. But that's pretty much all Aberdeen did the rest of the game. St Mirren were pretty good again. So maybe not quite as good as last week. Maybe didn't create quite as many opportunities as last week until the last sort of couple of minutes. But again, it'll be one that we said about St Johnstone earlier, being annoyed at not picking up all 3 points. And I think St Mirren will be in exactly the same boat, especially now that because of, you know, those sort of given results, that they will be going to bottom of the table now.
Yeah, I'm finding that the sort of Aberdeen's striker options are totally hindering the team. I'm not sure if it's a coincidence that you've got players like Hedges. That was looking so influential when Sam Cosgrove wasn't in the team. Now he's back and he's sort of back to the performances he was putting in last season when, I mean, he was playing with Cosgrove again. I'm just not sure if Cosgrove suits that sort of 3-4-3. I know Aberdeen, I think they went back to 4 at the back in this game.
They did it in the second half. They were still the 3... sort of a 3-4-3 kind of setup in the first half, and then in the second half they changed it to more of a 4-3-3.
Just finding that teams are find it so easy to defend against Aberdeen, and St Mirren are probably one of the better sides at that. Aberdeen's sort of attacking play is pretty obvious, and it's again, as I said, reverting back to last year. All they do is get the ball wide and try and put a cross in, and all you really need to do is double up on your fullback and say, right, okay, you're not getting anywhere near this sort of area of the pitch. And once Aberdeen are sort of blocked out of that, they just pass it side to side so slowly, not creating any openings, and it's just dull as dishwater.
Yes, I was just going to say, I mean, it's all well and good to point to the injuries. I think obviously Watkins is a big one when you kind of consider the play style, because that system that had been implemented towards the start of the season relied so much on the kind of interchanging fluidity at the top end of the pitch. You don't get that with Cosgrove. Those aren't his strengths. So, you know, it's very easy to just stick him in the team and hope he can score some goals. But if it doesn't suit his playstyle, it's just not going to happen. And yeah, again, I don't think that's maybe what McInnes is looking for. But unfortunately, the team is just so rigid up front that there's not enough guile, not enough inventiveness to kind of open up a defence. And like you say, St Mirren very good at that. So yeah, it's very easy to do what he's done and just stick someone out into the position and hope he can play the role that he's not comfortable with. But you know, that's not how it works.
Yeah, but I mean, you said obviously there about the striker options. I mean, that you've got to say there with McInnes. I mean, he's basically signed Curtis Main, who is just a worse version of Sam Cosgrove, who works a little bit harder. I mean, why sign two strikers who are pretty much the same kind of player? You know, that doesn't make sense. And to be fair, Edmondson is sort of in that similar kind of mould as well. So, I mean, you've got three strikers who are effectively all do the same thing. I mean, I wasn't massive on Watkins as the main striker, and I still don't see why perhaps Cosgrove can't fit in somewhat into the system. But it seems to me more that McInnes sees him as a totally one-dimensional target man, and when he's in the team, that's all Aberdeen are going to do is going to try and launch it up to him, or stick crosses in just to aim at his head. And it shows the signs that he's somebody who is totally run out of ideas.
Yeah, I think St Mirren will come out of this game pretty disappointed they've not won it. They created plenty of chances throughout, and when Aberdeen went down to 10 men, I mean, you could even argue they're down to 9 men because of how bad Shea Logan was.
Well, you then, 10 minutes later, were down to probably 8 men because they brought on Funza Ojo.
Well, and then Curtis Main, so you're just eliminating players at will here, to be fair. Just, somebody should have won at the end, for sure. Lee Irwin, he has any sort of instincts in the box, he can realise, I should put this shot anywhere where there aren't players, and he just shoots directly in where an Aberdeen player is standing. Don't understand that. Thought that was an awful miss, actually. Fair play to Constein for sort of getting back on the line and blocking it, but he shouldn't have been able to get into that position to do so. Irwin should stick that away, no question. And I think that was the most telling thing from this game for me was post-match comments. Goodwin says he was disappointed with a point. McInnes says he's happy with a point, and that kind of tells you where Aberdeen are at the minute.
Yeah, it tells you that Goodwin, let's say, I mean, plenty of managers would have taken this away from come away from this game. I probably would have seen something like Brian Rice and Mickey Mellon would have come away from a similar result saying a great point. But it's clear to see that Jim Goodwin does see this as a disappointment and recognises it's a game that's got away from them, that they should have won. And that he's got a bit more ambition for his side rather than to try and fight out at the bottom of the table, which I think defensively they've got a team who could maybe try and get into the top six offensively. And I mean, it's epitomised by this moment at the end. It's just not quite there going forward, and especially in front of goal. They are creating opportunities, and I mean, the writing was all over. They're creating opportunities from the very first minute and just totally bypassing Taylor early on. They kept getting in behind down the Aberdeen kind of left, and Greg Lee was having to come in quite a lot and tuck in behind Aberdeen's defence, which, I mean, we said about Celtic earlier, looked disorganised. I mean, Aberdeen's defence looked horrendously disorganised on Saturday. I mean, the fact that Greg Lee's having to come across from left wing-back and basically defend the right-back position on a number of occasions kind of, it tells you the story there. So I mean, St Mirren were causing Aberdeen all sorts of problems, but at the moment they just don't have enough firepower that's going to see them anywhere higher than about maybe 9th or 10th. I mean, the defence and the goalkeeper, I think Jack Anik's a great goalkeeper. They're both really solid. It's just they just don't have that, like you said, that bit of guile and bit of they're not clinical enough at the top end, and it's just totally epitomised by that moment at the end of the game where they should have won.
I think we could probably...
I was just going to say, referring to the post-match comments, another issue that I think a lot of Aberdeen supporters will have is just kind of the constant deflection into other subjects aside from just your own team's performance. Because regardless, you know, taking away the sending off, which we've actually not mentioned, and also the penalty decision, which McInnes thinks is harsh. I think it's harsh as well. I think it's harsh in the sense that, obviously, again, there's no distance involved, but why is his arm up there? I think you can't really have many arguments there. But, yeah, it's just the constant avoidance of actually talking about your team's performance and what it is that's going wrong, why there's something missing at the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, I think, like, without sort of mentioning that that red card, it was almost because there's bigger problems at foot for Aberdeen other than players getting sent off. And I think we can all agree that the second yellow card wasn't a second yellow, and he should have stayed on the pitch. But yeah, that's another issue from McInnes. He did it after the League Cup defeat to St Mirren. He was claiming that Aberdeen should have had a couple of penalties, and now he's complaining about the officials as well. And I mean, you can probably spin that and say he's not getting asked difficult questions, and I don't think he sort of reacts to well to difficult questions. But I think we could
probably. I mean, you're talking about difficult questions, and the one that, I mean, we've said this before and keep asking, why is effectively a man in his 30s clearly on the decline? Is basically a part-time footballer, coming on ahead of a big money South American internationalist in the same position. I mean, that's one that I'd love to have answered as a fan. But I mean, there's so many questions that don't get answered, they don't get asked to McInnes. And I think he is a beneficiary, and same with Neil Lennon, of the fact that he clearly has a lot of friends in the media, whereas, you know, we've seen it before with someone like, oh Christ, I've forgotten his name now. He was the Italian Kilmarnock manager.
Alessio,
whereas he was basically hounded from day one. Any result, he was under massive scrutiny. But results like this for McInnes, and it's almost, you know, totally glossed over. And then when you pick up a couple of results and you're like, well, how well is McInnes doing at Aberdeen? He is hugely, I think, a big beneficiary of having some good friends and being quite media savvy. But there's a lot of big questions that need to be asked, and I just don't think that he's got the answers for them.
Mm-hmm. I think Aberdeen fans could sit and bang their heads against the wall with the whole Ronald Hernandez issue for ages, until he probably eventually gets loaned out and he's never to be seen again, and then it's just forgotten about until years later when you realise you've wasted so much money on a player that it seems the manager didn't even want in the first place. But I think we'll just wrap things up there for this week. Obviously, we'll be back next week looking over the coming weekend's action. You know where to sort of find us on social media and all those sort of stuff. Yeah, and well, as always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.